Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Welcome aboard. It is Monday. Happy to have you guys along after this another spectacular weather weeks and on end. It's been great. Welcome, Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Glad to have you on this Monday as we roll on into college football season, pro football season. It's football season, people. And another great one over the past weekend for Indiana as they roll big over Indiana State, 73-0. The Indianapolis Colts start 2-0 for the first time since 2009 as Shane Steichen and crew continue to roll on. But that was a little bit of luck yesterday. I'm not going to lie. As was it a 61-yard field goal attempt at the end of the game was pushed to the right. But Denver gets called for a flag of, I forget the exact call, but leverage is what it was called for jumping or something. But holy cow, a 15-yard penalty, and time had expired. And so they get one play back on the clock with another 15 yards, and boom, nailed the field goal. Colts take the win home. Woo, that was, hey, you got to have some luck, right? Lots of other big games over the weekend, and mostly in the SEC as far as conference games, some big-time games. Notre Dame starts the season 0-2. Holy smokes, are they out of the college football playoffs already? Not so fast, my friend. It's Notre Dame. Don't get too excited. They want Notre Dame in. They need Notre Dame in, but Notre Dame not making it easy on the college football playoff committee. The SEC had some, definitely had some big games over the weekend. And wow, the Tennessee-Georgia game, was that one spectacular, fun to watch. You thought Tennessee was going to be able to break the, was it an 8-year streak that they had lost to the Georgia Bulldogs, 8 straight games, and it looked like they had it. Just can't get it done. And Georgia is able to come back and win that game in overtime, man. Boy, that's a big loss for Tennessee, 44-41 in overtime. LSU ends up with a 20-10 win over Florida. Florida now 1-2 on the season. Things not starting out so well for them. Texas, I think I saw that Arch Manning got booed by his own people, by his own fans. Things not start. It's just all hype. It's not his fault. It's hype. It's hype, people. So just buying into the hype, and it's I can't blame him. He's being propped up. But, hey, it is what it is. Oklahoma, number 13, Oklahoma goes to 3-0 with a big 42-3 win. So good for them. How about Vanderbilt? Surprising people with a big win at South Carolina, 31-7. Woo! Texas A&M, as I said, a big, big win up in South Bend over Notre Dame to send the Fighting Irish to an 0-2 start. The number 8 Fighting Irish, how far will they drop? We will see. Some guys are out looking for a job already. None more surprising or less surprising than Deshaun Foster out at UCLA after an 0-3 start. I was not surprised at all to see this happen. Things are obviously not going well in Los Angeles. You know, UCLA is located in Los Angeles. Deshaun Foster can tell you that, at least that much. But he's not the only one. Va-Tech, Virginia Tech, got beat by Old Dominion. Familiar name, Indiana opponent in week two. Yeah, man, they went down there and got them some with a big win over Virginia Tech. It was 28-0 at the half, I believe. Kirk Ferentz takes over as the all-time wins leader in the Big Ten. He surpasses Woody Hayes with a win over the weekend. Virginia Tech's coach, speaking of Virginia Tech, Brent Pryor, he's out as well after that loss to Old Dominion. So coaches getting fired sooner in college now because programs don't have time to wait. We saw it last year with Purdue making the move wisely, making the move. And now you a couple other programs already here early into the college football season. So Oklahoma, see, I mentioned them. They roll on. Ole Miss and Arkansas battled down in Oxford as the Rebels come out with a win. Auburn remains undefeated with a win over Kane Womack's old squad, South Alabama. Missouri keeps rolling. Mississippi State, 63-0. Kentucky, a lot of, well, there were, of any conference games, there were mostly, there were a couple of Big Ten conference games, though. Purdue hosted USC, and to be honest with you, they did not have a bad a showing. Indiana wins 73-0 over Indiana State. UCLA loses at home to New Mexico, 35-10. Yeah, that was the last straw for those guys. Ohio State, a pedestrian 37-9 win over Ohio, but Ohio had beaten West Virginia the week before. So Ohio, pretty good out of the MAC. Penn State, 52-6 over Villanova. Oregon, Northwestern, a surprisingly good showing at home against Oregon, 34-14, that final score ended up being. But the Illini, a 38-0 win over Western Michigan, Indiana's next opponent. Of course, we'll be talking about that game a lot today as Don Fisher joins us on the program, as will Dustin DePeric. Coach Griff will stop by as well to catch up on all things that happened over the weekend. Nebraska, 59-7, but they played Houston Christian. And that sounds like a high school. Yeah. Maryland continues to roll, 44-17 over Towson this weekend. Rutgers puts up 60 on Norfolk State. Michigan State, 41-24 over Youngstown State. And that was USC with that 33-17 win up in West Lafayette, Iowa. The 47-7 win over UMass to put Kirk Ferentz as the all-time leader. Cal beats Minnesota out in Palo Alto, 27-14 win. So, and then now, this week, it's on, baby. This week, it is on as the conference games and virtually all conferences will be getting after it. One of those teams that's not is Oregon because they play Oregon State. But they already played their first conference game this past weekend with Purdue. But the rest of the crew, the games that are coming up, Indiana, of course, none bigger than the Indiana Hoosiers and the Fighting Illini, as the Illini is going to move up in the poll this week as Notre Dame loses. Let's see. I'm not sure who else if anyone else in the top 10 lost, I can't remember, but Indiana will likely move up just a little bit. So that top 10 matchup comes up this Saturday night in prime time at 7:30 on NBC. Russell says Nebraska might make the CFP with a very easy and favorable schedule this season. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. They've got a lot of teams they've got to climb over. Lots of teams they have to climb over. We'll see. We shall see. yeah, Purdue doesn't get any easier for them as they'll take on the Fighting Irish, and they are going to be not happy after an 0-2 start. And they've got to get things on the roll. Let's see. Tino Sunseri, the athletics director, offensive coordinator who left Indiana out to go to UCLA, talked about that being I'm just not sure that was a wise move with it was a little shaky last year as it was, but hey, you've got to do what you've got to do. And we'll see how that rolls out for him, as there's probably going to be some coaching changes, but I don't know that how deep you can't go too deep once you're already in the season to replace those everyone. So Brian says Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of defense. A&M did whatever they wanted. We shall see, but their schedule gets a little easier as well. Sean says game day skipping Indiana for two lost Florida and Miami. SEC having ESPN being marketed partner showing. Yeah, that's not a surprise. Let's take our first break. When we come back, the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, joins us. We get this Monday started off right. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Andy Moore. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. No better way to start your week off better than with the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, who had another fun weekend getting to call an Indiana win as the Hoosiers go to 3-0 on the season, Don. And as the thing I've noticed about this offense is each week it's like a section of the offense has really just gotten better and taken a big step. The passing game, obviously, in weeks 2 and 3, but to different guys. It was bringing in somebody new into the fold each week, whether it's a receiver or running back. And I know that that's something that Kurt Cignetti is happy to see.
No question. You can hear me okay? I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
I hear myself. They could. At any rate, yes, I agree with that. This is a football team that's gotten better in each of the three games that they played. Let's put it this way. They've improved in the last two ball games from game one. Game one was just when you open up and you've got all these new faces, you've got a ball club that can challenge you a little bit. ODU certainly did that in the early part of the contest, but Indiana has definitely made improvements in just about every area. There were still things that I know Coach Cignetti was not pleased with on Saturday, a couple of decisions that were made and a couple of spots where guys weren't in the right place and those kinds of things, but that happens in every ball game. And sometimes it comes in to bite you in a really good contest, of which Indiana is about to face a team that's really good coming up on Saturday night. So there's always things to clean up. Coaches will always find something to harp on and to talk about and why you've got to get better. And Coach Cignetti is probably as good as anybody at doing that.
Absolutely. He gets your attention, no doubt. Fernando Mendoza, Indiana's quarterback, definitely you can see the sharpness kind of coming into – it's like someone took the dial and just kind of brought it into better clarity. It says his passes were more on target. He looked much more comfortable with the offense. And, man, he was throwing some lasers out there. As he goes 19 of 20, Don, only plays the first half, 270 yards. He ends up with 5 touchdowns total. What a performance by Fernando.
Yeah, he was terrific in this ball game, but we also have to point out that the competition wasn't what you would like to see to set you up for the next ball game. God bless Indiana State. I was there for 2.5 years and did 3 football seasons there. All I can tell you is this program has digressed over the years. They had some really good teams for a while back. I can't remember the coach that they had for many years did a heck of a job after I left. I was there in 70, 71, and 72. But they had some really good years, and then things started to slide, and they've had a number of different coaches try to resurrect it. I think Kurt Mallory has done as well as anybody could expect. of that program because they have really struggled. And I don't think the transfer portal, maybe it's helped them a little bit, but they were totally outmanned on Saturday with this by this Indiana football team. And that's why you have to take this this win with a grain of salt, so to speak. Obviously, they didn't face a challenge there, and that's not really what you want when you get ready for the next stretch of games that Indiana's going to play.
No, because there is no doubt that this next three-game stretch is the toughest three-game stretch of the season for Indiana, but they're going to have to be ready. At least the game's coming at home against an Illini team that is also 3-0, looking pretty good as they continue to get better and better. Of course, they're a top 10 team, gives Indiana an opportunity to really make some noise with this opportunity of the Illini coming in. But, man, this is going to be a formidable challenge. It's going to be an electric environment. You're going to have it. We're going to be under the lights, Don. Right. We're going to be on national TV, a top 10 matchup. This is as big. I know that people think of the Ohio States and all those as the big games, but really, this is as big a game as has come to Memorial Stadium in a long time, because Indiana is expected to either be with Illinois or beat Illinois, who's a top 10 team. When's the last time a top 10 team was coming to Memorial Stadium and people could honestly say, well, I think Indiana's going to win that game?
Well, that would have been 1967. That's the last time they did it. So we know that that it's been a long time coming, and Indiana obviously has a challenge in front of them. I think they'll be up for that challenge. I really do. Illinois is really good, and Brett Bielema has really turned that program around. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're ranked ninth or eighth in the country now, I believe. Indiana's ranked 17th. The Hoosiers have jumped up to, at least in the coaches' poll. And I think this is something that you have to have at this point in the season. You've got to figure out where you're actually at. And to this juncture, because of the competition that Indiana's faced in their first three ball games, we're going to finally get a true test of what where this team is at. I think that's the biggest thing about this contest that interests me.
Yeah, and which I know you can't really pay attention to other teams, but in this day and age, with the college football playoffs being of so importance and every game really counting, you look at other teams like Notre Dame, who started 0-2, that, boy, they're in trouble already. So these games, when you get the opportunity like this game here, you've got to take advantage of it. And Indiana needs to get that signature win that they haven't really gotten yet under Kurt Cignetti, although – you could say everything he's done has been signature, to be honest with you, because of the past. But now people want to see them get that signature win, Don, and this would certainly be one of those.
Well, and there's no question. That's the key. I think most people thought last year that the Michigan game was pretty much a signature win in many respects. But Michigan, and they turned out to be pretty good because they beat Ohio State last year. So.
In the last game of the season, no less, on the road.
Right, exactly. So you have to think about, I don't label ball games, but this is a big one, and there's no question. There's been big ones in the past, but this is really important ball game for, I think, this Indiana football program. I do.
Yeah, without question. And not jumping back a little bit, I don't know if you saw that Old Dominion just handled Vol Tech all that they just, it was 28-0 at the half. So Kurt Cignetti kept trying to tell people, hey, this Old Dominion team's better than you think. And they are, I believe. So just to give some people a little background there, but now Indiana has to get into it's conference play on top of that. So you've got conference play. You've got just really not really conference as much as everything you're always thinking toward the CFP, which is great. For Indiana fans to be looking at the CFP as a goal right now already, it's pretty incredible but it's a reality. And every one of these games are of great importance in that realm, and none bigger than this one because it is against a ranked team that the pundits have said, you know what, we think this is a top 10 team. So an incredible opportunity for Indiana at home in front of its home fans this Saturday night.
Yep, it's very important. I think right now the big question mark on IU is Lee Beebe. Is you know, what's his injury? Will we find out anything about that today? I would assume we'll hear something. But Beebe, of course, in the first three ball games, you know, he had a fumble in that first ball game, and then he came back after halftime and played really well. And he played really well last week, and he was playing well in this ball game until he went down. So that takes away a significant piece of what Indiana's three running back, or the three-pronged running back attack that Indiana utilizes with those three different backs. But I thought Kobe Martin came into that ball game just like he did last year when he played. He got some opportunities early in the season and played four games. And then, of course, he was not eligible to play any longer because he redshirted. He's a redshirt freshman. I thought he looked very good in the ball game against Indiana State. But then who didn't look good in that contest? So this is, again, injury is always play a role. Hopefully Lee Beebe is okay and will be able to get back here, if he's not this week, next week, or the following week, because he's going to be a pivotal piece, I think, for this Indiana football team.
No question about that, Don. And it also shows the fact of how important, as we've watched these first three games, you've had Kalon Black and Roman Hemby, in addition to Lee Beebe, all being an important piece in that running game.
Right.
So Indiana has some depth there. But man, Lee Beebe has been so good. You don't want to lose him.
Right.
He's just been a great addition to that backfield. And especially in a game like the Illinois game, you want to have all your bullets, man. But Indiana has shown some, not only has they've shown depth in running back right now, but that shows that the offensive line is kind of growing. They're doing better and better. Touchdown pass to the tight end, something we hadn't seen for a while. Stays pulling one in over the weekend. So all things are pointing in the right direction for this Indiana team. Don, is if you compare them to this year versus last year, it's hard because they didn't face an opponent of this stature this early. But where do you see that if you were comparing?
I try not to compare anymore, because you've got, again, you've got a 30-year team is new. So making comparisons at this point doesn't make a lot of sense. If you had the same players out there, you could tell something. But I just don't compare at this juncture. I just think Indiana has an opportunity here to make people believe that they are as good as many of us in the Hoosier Nation believe that they are. And that's the challenge coming up this week. It is a night game. It's on NBC. Everybody's excited about it. It's on national television, but the people that care the most are the ones that are going to be in the stands, and it will be packed. And that's the good news. It's a sellout, and it's going to be a great crowd. I don't think we're going to have people leaving at halftime in this one, which will be really good. And the student body will be on hand, and I think they'll be in full voice, as we know.
I was a little surprised at the crowd in a good way this past weekend for a Friday night game with Bloomington North and South playing each other in town. The crowd was better than I anticipated it would be on that day, but it is what it is. Now you don't have to worry about that. You've got the stage all to yourself, and yeah, the importance of that game coming up. The defensive line, Don, this is going to be probably one of the most important units this Saturday in this game, because this is going to be a true test for them. The Illini has a great passing game, and this is going, can they get to the quarterback? Can they cause disruptions? Can they hurry him? Whatever the case, put pressure on him, because that's what Brett Bielema is counting on, that's not the case.
Right. And this is going to be a challenge for Mendoza. I think Fernando, he's had, the last two ball games, very good performances in regard to his throwing and that kind of thing, but he hasn't had a lot of pressure on him. And we know that last year he was running for his life most of the time at California, and have all those negatives gotten out of his head. Because, when a quarterback is chased like he was last year, you're sacked 47 times, I think it was, that he was sacked last season. I saw those happy feet in spring practice, and I saw him a little bit at the start of the fall practice, but not nearly as bad. And then I think he's settled in at this juncture. I think he's looking, he's going through his reads and all that kind of stuff. And I think he's making better decisions, even though I did see Kurt Cignetti go up to him a couple of times in the ball game on Saturday. And he was not pleased about something that happened out there in the quarterback position. So it's still a process. And that's what this is. It's a journey through a grind of the Big Ten season that just is beginning. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Indiana and this football team handle it.
Absolutely, because this is a major opportunity. And because of the road games at Oregon, at Penn State, this is one you definitely don't want to let get away, because everybody's going to be watching this, Don. But yep. The voters and the AP voters, and even though the College Football Playoff Committee has not voted yet, they're paying attention to this stuff. It all adds up. So it's a big, it's a major importance.
Yep. I got to go. It's 9:15.
All right, brother. Next, so this Thursday, the show's back to Hoosier Hanks.
It is.
Over.
Yep.
And you'll be with the coach there and a special guest. Make sure you catch Don at Hoosier Hanks East. We appreciate you, brother.
Thanks for having me. See you, Jim.
You betcha. There's the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, joining us here as he does each and every Monday. And you can catch them this Thursday. It's back to Thursdays again at Hoosier Hanks East over on College Mall Road. It's at 1285 East College Mall Road here in Bloomington, as the Kurt Cignetti radio show. It's Inside Indiana Football is really the name of it, with Kurt Cignetti. But that happens on Thursday. The Hoosiers, man, this is such a huge opportunity that they have to win. I know that people would look at me as goofy as saying, oh, must win game. Yeah, it is, because it's Indiana, and of how certain people view Indiana, you hear the Indiana. And so they have a perception. You've got to win this game. You have to win. Number one, it's a home game. You got to win at home. And it is of huge importance because of what it can do for this team. Then they go to Iowa, and Iowa's looking okay, but I had wondered what Iowa was going to look like with the new quarterback, a thrower, a guy that had thrown for 10,000 yards. And you know what? Not that their offense is not different. They're still not taking advantage of having a guy that has thrown all over the moon, to the moon and back. So that's going to be another opportunity for Indiana to go on the road and get a quality win. If Indiana can start 5-0, buddy, I've said that they have to start 5-1 off this first half of the season to have a shot at the college football playoffs, and that hasn't changed. They have to go to Oregon. Tough, tough place to play. Tough, tough team to play against. But losing a top five game after winning a top 10 game, it's not going to hurt you that badly, and nor should it, as long as you make a good showing. And I think Indiana will do that. My only question, we'll find out by then, is the defensive line. How is Indiana improved there? That's what we don't know yet. We'll see against this Illinois team, as they will be putting the pressure against Indiana to throw the ball deep. And what can Indiana do? Can they now, you can't use the stats from this Indiana State game because they're utterly crazy. Although here's the craziest one. Look at penalties in that game. There were six total, and unfortunately all six of them on Indiana. That is not, Kurt Cignetti cannot be happy about that. Having six penalties in a game, that's just too many. I don't care who you're playing. Now, Indiana State had zero. Now, maybe the officials felt sorry for Indiana State and said, you know what, let them hold. It's not helping them. Let them do whatever. But zero penalties, that's pretty, pretty, pretty good, because they had a total of 77 yards total offense. Very balanced. 38 yards passing and 39 yards on the ground. Yeah, that's pretty devastating when your opponent, Indiana per se, had 379 yards passing and again 300 yards rushing for the third straight game. Have to really go back and look to see when that has happened in the recent past. It's been a while, I can tell you that. You may have to go back to Tevin Coleman, the days of Tevin Coleman. But first downs, 33-5. Indiana, 33-5. That's a little. Indiana only converted on third down six times, but they didn't need to. Running 67 plays in that game, averaging 10 yards a play. I just don't know how much you can really take from that game. That's a game that you really probably would rather have played in game one, if you want to be completely honest, because Old Dominion would have been the best game to play in game three to get the best, the best challenge, I guess you would say. Hey, we've got lots more coming up. Indiana Sports Beat Radio with you on this Monday, getting your week started off right. We're back with more right after these
Welcome
messages.
Back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Monday. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call in Evansville and that region, the southwest part of Indiana, or up in the region. On the Voice of the Region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB in the region and all of Chicago and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. You've already got it locked in the right spot. Leave it right there. Make sure you've got that button pressed to keep it there so as you travel throughout the day. Best in sports coverage wherever you're traveling in those areas. There's the only sports stations in all of those areas, so keep it on. Or if you're on following us on social media, you know the drill. Please hit the like button and the subscribe button. Keep us in. Power rankings. What's it mean? Doesn't mean jack. It doesn't mean diddly squat because it's still guessing. It's people taking where, okay, well, we were guessing that they were here and now, well, we'll move them here because of this. But the one thing that I keep seeing, Oregon moving up. I said it a week ago. I'll say it again. I think Oregon might be the best team in the country. They've jumped four spots in ESPN's power rankings to number two behind the Buckeyes. Are they better? Maybe. But out of the Buckeyes, running back by committee approach, freshman Bo Jackson has emerged in a big way. Can you imagine having that name? I mean, we've got Indiana basketball right now with Anthony Thompson, who was in for a visit over the weekend. We'll talk about that probably tomorrow. But Bo Jackson, can you imagine carrying that name? Huh. Oregon. Dan Lanning's got another group. I mean, you just got to give him all kinds of props. New quarterback again, doesn't matter. They're rolling. Miami. I like Miami because I like the quarterback. I've said it week one in that huge game against Notre Dame. He just had dead eyes. No emotion. He's getting after it, man. He is getting after it. Bill says that Oregon struggled with Northwestern. I don't know how much they struggled or part of that is traveling back three time zones. Actually, it's at Northwestern, it's only considered two, but you know, they're just a few miles from it being a third time zone. But that matters. It has shown time and time again that it matters. It's hard. Plus, if I'm not mistaken, that was a noon game, which makes it 9 a.m. and on the West Coast. Holy smokes. Why would you do that to a West Coast team? First, it's bad enough that they have to travel all the way back to the East, and then you're going to put them at noon? Crazy. So, we'll see. We shall see. The AP vote, that's not out already, is it? That comes out today at 2, I believe. But
Miami moves up. LSU kind of stays up. Georgia stays up there. Texas A&M. So now in the top six on ESPN's power rankings, you've got three SEC teams, Miami, and three Big Ten teams in the top seven. Florida State, the ACC, after so many years of kind of stinking it up, got a couple representatives now in Florida State and not Clemson, Miami. I think that's going to hurt Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame has an easy schedule the rest of the season, to my knowledge. I'm going to have to pull that up. But besides, see, I know they play USC. That game is on the horizon. This week, they have a get-right game. Although Purdue has played much better, I've got to give it to Barry Odom. He's done a heck of a job getting them out. The AP poll is out already. I did not. They must have changed that. We'll pull that up in a second. But Texas A&M last year lost this game at home. This year they turned the tables and beat Notre Dame 41-40 in South Bend. The Irish now dropped to number 24. Yeah, that's going to be tough to overcome. They do play at Arkansas, which just gave Ole Miss all they wanted to in Oxford, Mississippi. That's not going to be easy. You've got a Boise State team that comes in that is not Boise State, North Carolina State. Then in mid-October, the Trojans come to South Bend. I'm going to give that game to Notre Dame just because, again, you're traveling all the way back east, and that's been shown to be difficult. But other than that, they've got Navy, Boston College, Pittsburgh, who's been okay, Syracuse, and Stanford. USC ranked at 25th, the only ranked team on Notre Dame's schedule from here out. From here for the rest of the season, 9 games, and they've got one ranked team, and that's barely. Everybody always like to talk about who teams beat, especially the SEC. Well, they beat so-and-so. Well, my thing has always been, but who did you lose to? My daughter would not be happy, but I use Ole Miss as an example last year. Everybody kept banging on, oh, Ole Miss, they're a team that should possibly be it. No, they lost at home to Kentucky, a bad Kentucky team last year. I don't care. You can win a big game, but if you lose a game like that you shouldn't, that takes that all away from me. For me, it does at least. It's funny how people can have, whatever rose-colored glasses they wish to have. But that's how it is. That's the way it was. So the AP poll now out a little earlier than normal. Indiana moves up a few spots. Ohio State remains at the top. Penn State also. So you've got two Big Ten teams at the top. Then LSU, which I don't know how good Florida is. So I don't know how. And Clemson. I don't know how good Clemson really is. They're 1-2 now and struggled against Troy. So how big of a win was that? Georgia looked good. That was a huge win on the road at Tennessee. Oregon in sixth. Florida State. Texas. Texas is the biggest bunch of overranked hype there is. What the hell are these people seeing in Texas? They beat UTEP 27-10. Arch Manning gets booed. Why on God's green earth is Texas a top 10 team? They're not to me, but it is what it is. How the Illinois should easily be ranked above Texas. Texas is 2-1. There's no way that a team that has a loss already in the first three games should be in the top 10, in my opinion, although their loss was to the number one team, I get that. They haven't looked great against others. So, Oklahoma, number 11, Iowa State, Ole Miss, I just talked about. So, once again, Alabama, Tennessee. So, in the top 15, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 teams in the top 15 belong to the SEC. Now, that will start to change as the season progresses. People, I know a lot of fans are complaining about IU. Well, they haven't beaten anybody yet, number one. Number two, they don't have the perception of being this great team. They were not thought of by a lot of people as a team that was going to return to the college football playoff. So it's already in their mind that they're not. That's why this game with Illinois carries so much importance. It's why Indiana has to win this game. It is their first true test in the regular season outside of, I mean, I'm not going to say Michigan wasn't a test last year, but Michigan wasn't a top 10 team. Michigan did not have the offense that Illinois has. And the setup is not what it is this year. It's perfect for Indiana. You've got them at home. People think that they'll see this the Illini as a team that will fight to be one of the four of the Big Ten teams I see getting into the CFP. You gotta win and knock them off. You've got to put yourself in that position. You've got to say, hey, you know what? We're one of the four Big Ten teams that you're going to have to look out for. And then after they win the Illinois game, you have to go to Iowa and win that game. Have to. Now, I say this with the CFP in mind. If you're looking at making the college football playoffs, you've got to beat somebody. Hey, Indiana has not done that yet. Last year, beating Michigan, I'm not going to say that was nobody because they did end up beating the eventual national champion on the road in the last game of the season. It was a solid win, but it didn't have the cachet that this game's going to have for so many reasons. Primetime television at 7:30 on Saturday night on national TV, top two ranked opponents. How does Indiana come out of this game? What do you think? What are your thoughts? USC squeezes in to the top 25. They're 3-0, and they're ranked a spot behind Notre Dame, which is 0-2. I'm sorry. If you're 0-2, out. You need to be out. It's like Texas has no right being a top 10 team. I don't care where they started. I saw a voter talking about the reasoning for rankings. Well, you know, I didn't have so-and-so in my preseason, so they're not as high yet. I'm like, I don't care. You didn't know Jack in the preseason. You don't know what these teams are like in the preseason. So they should be ranked as they are seen now, not last week, not the week before that. But I'm not an AP voter. Not that AP votes mean that much, to be honest with you. That's another thing I've got to tell fans. The AP is nice. It's good for bragging rights and all that. But the CFP committee has shown that they don't, that's not what is what everything that they do is based on. Indiana made it last year with a much lesser schedule than they have this year. Now, I think that Indiana can go 10-2 and have a better season. overall because of that schedule with road games at Oregon. I'm not saying they don't look like a top 20. Rudy's asking me if I am I saying they don't look like a top 25 team. They haven't performed like one. They've lost. And at the end of the day, you got to win. Now, they've lost to two of the teams they've lost to. Probably the two best teams are going to play on the season. Speaking of Notre Dame, losing to Miami, which is a very good program. Are they a top five team? I don't know about that. But we don't know who's where just yet. Miami looks pretty dang on good, I'll tell you that. The thing is, Notre Dame's not going to be challenged much the rest of the year. Even the game with USC, while it'll be a challenge, but when you travel across the country, like USC is having to do, it's going to matter. Coach Griff stepping in with us right now. Coach, just talking about this weekend's games and how they're starting to impact the perception of beliefs on who's what, when, where. The SEC just has, you know, most of their conference ranked. but that's nothing different. AP rankings, they're nice. But at the end of the day, by the time we get to what is it, week seven, or that the CFP will come out with their first vote?
Yeah, you can hear me, correct? Since I always have the... yeah, I do believe that's correct. I've always said that these ratings, the AP, even the coaches' ratings for that matter, they shouldn't even put anything out until after the fourth or fifth week when you've got a true feeling and data in front of you to make logical picks and things like that. But this is what happens when you have these preseason polls. Things don't move necessarily like you would think they would move when a team loses to a lesser team. Just like everybody was complaining about Indiana's non-conference schedule, lo and behold, Old Dominion's FPI is better than five Big Ten teams as well as other group of five teams. They just went into Blacksburg and shellacked Virginia Tech, getting the coach, Brent Fry, fired. He lost his job the next day. Old Dominion put it on him. And all of a sudden, you know, that talk has gone away about Indiana's non-conference schedule. But they're still talking about, well, we don't know what Indiana is. But that's neither here nor there. You're correct. I just think that...
Say that. I like to hear that. Say that again.
You are correct.
Thank you. you are correct, sir.
You are correct, sir. This whole thing has gotten, I mean, it's just crazy. I just saw, even on three, Andy Staples put out a column yesterday where he's putting out the technical top 12 playoff teams in the college football playoffs after week three. And it's crazy because he's got two Big 12 teams in the top 12 for the playoffs. And I'm thinking, that's crazy. That's not going to happen. That's not even legitimate. So it's just to think, it gets everybody's dandruff up and ruffles some feathers, but that's what I've always felt. It'd be better if they didn't do anything until week four or five. And then, like you said, you get to week seven.
Which is why the CFP committee doesn't do that. And
right.
The AP poll, let's be honest with you, that has now become, it's just a driving force for views and reads and not all that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's all that way. I mean, that's just the way it is. But it does cast, I don't know if it's dispersions or what, but when you come to you come to that time period when you are starting to talk this narrative of who gets in, who doesn't, it always seems like the argument goes back to where they were in the AP poll or the coaches poll before the season, during the season, or week four or week five. And there's some case to be made, whether it's pro or con.
Well, we about shall see.
About those polls.
Let's take a break. Dustin Napierik from the Indy Star will join us next. Indy Pacers beat writer. We'll see where the Pacers are before we get back to college football. Just a little update. And see how his summer's been going. Plenty more coming. Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Griff with us. Dustin Napierik up next after these messages. If you're looking... Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. Glad to have you along, and even happier to have Dustin Napierik back with us. He's been on assignment, and glad to have him back. You know, that's the code, man.
Sure. In a manner of speaking, everything. I suppose.
It covers everything.
It does.
It covers everything. We just use that on here for... Because when I was growing up, I watched the local news. I read the paper when I was growing up. But they were always, when they weren't there, Dustin Napierik is on assignment this week. And so it didn't matter what. You could be going to the dentist, and you're on assignment. Trust me.
There.
So how have you been? How's your summer been?
Good. Yeah, a couple, last weekend was the first weekend in town in a bit. You know, we went to D.C. to visit some friends. We went to my wife's grandmother turned 100, and so we went to her birthday party. That was really, really cool up in South Bend.
What's her name? Let's get a name.
Maria. Maria just.
Maria. Yes, sir. All right. Happy birthday, Maria.
That was a lot of fun. And so, I've been hopping around and doing a lot of nothing. I've got 2 more weeks until 2 weeks from today is Pacers Media Day, which starts practice, which means I have to actually work again. And so enjoying the time that I'm not doing much of anything other than keeping up on stuff. But, you know, the occasional thing, Obi Toppin had his camp this weekend at Gainbridge. So got to go talk to him and you know, get a little bit about how his summer has gone and that kind of stuff. And, you know, went to TJ McConnell's day at the Indy Indians game a while back, but just little stuff like that has sort of popped up. But mostly it's been.
Did he throw out the first pitch?
What's up? Yeah, he threw out the first pitch. It was just okay, you know. He looped it a little bit.
I've never had to do that. And I always like, man, I'd get up there and I would just drop one. Everybody thinks that.
Everybody. You won't. Yeah. I've done it once.
I can't tell you the last time I actually stood on a mound. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. So, and yeah. Everybody tells you not to do that. We had Chase Briscoe on not too long ago, the NASCAR driver from Mitchell, who's actually second in the points right now as they headed into the playoffs in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. But he threw out a couple first pitches this summer, but one was at the Cubs. And he stood on the mound and dropped a dime in there. And I'm like, my man has played baseball before. Mm. So, but yeah, it's always a little daunting and intimidating, but it's also entertaining when, hey, there's nothing better than seeing those horrible throws where people are wham, and it goes, east, west instead of north, south.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had to do it? You've ever gotten a chance to do that?
No, I did for one reason. This is going to sound weird. This is getting way back. But when I was in Virginia, I covered, there was this league called the Rockingham County Baseball League. And it was like, they called it semi-pro. Nobody got any money for it. It was like, but it was this community league. And they had, it was like, this is very, very old school. It's a league that's existed since, I think, 1924, if I'm not mistaken. That's a number that rings in my head. But it was basically, you could play anytime from when you were about 16 to as old as you wanted to, basically. And there were a bunch of guys there that were, you know, it had had some stints in the minor leagues, a bunch of guys that played college ball, a bunch of guys that were playing college ball that were like at smaller schools that were kind of using that. As their summer league guys that were kind of, you know, grew up locally and weren't going to kind of the bigger summer leagues, your Cape Cod, your, you know, they even have a summer league in that vicinity. It's called the Valley Baseball League. But guys that couldn't make that, were in this league, and it's a really super cool league. I mean, like, you know, cool little old school, old timey ballparks. you know, like in cornfields, you know, stuff. This is in like Harrisonburg, Virginia. So it's, you know, south of that, like kind of Nova, well, south of that kind of Northern Virginia sprawl in Blue Ridge Mountain territory. And so I'd come, you know, I'd been there for 5 years, and it was game seven of the championship right before I was about to leave to go to come to Indiana the first time. And so it was like, I wanted to stay up, stick around and cover this up until the last day. Cause it was, you know, game seven of the championship series. And our local TV guy, you know, said, "Are you guys looking for somebody to do the first pitch? Like, Dustin's leaving. You guys should have Dustin do it. Like, wouldn't that be cool?" And they knew it because I took it serious. Like, I really, we as a paper took it serious. And I, you know, particularly took it serious because I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a lot of fun to cover. And so, yeah, they told me a little bit before. I did full warm up beforehand. I was like, okay, like you're not, I'm not like, you know, looping it from 60, you know, from 40 feet or something like that. I'm going on the mound. And I did bounce it in the, left-hand hitters, you know, box basically. So it was a little bit to the, you know, a little bit to the left there. You know, it was definitely a ball in the dirt, but I mean, I got it there.
Just a bit outside,
just a bit in the dirt, you know, enough for the guy to get it though. You know, he was one of the best catchers in the league. Dustin Bowman was his name. So he managed to, you know, to turn and get that one. And, you know,
a good catcher. That's a sign of a good catcher.
What's that? Yeah. No, he was the real deal.
Look good.
Yeah, he was the real deal. He was a good ball player. Anyway, so yeah, I've done it once.
Plenty going on, of course, in as the Pacers, their first preseason game, less than a month away. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is just world life just doesn't stop people.
No, it does not.
Noticed it. It just doesn't stop.
Sure
we're deep midway into September and October 7th. The first preseason game for the Pacers against the Timberwolves, as they will travel for that one before coming back home to take on the Thunder. Mm-hmm. Thunder and the Lightning. I remember. I just found out who sang that song.
And, it's AC/DC.
That's Thunderstruck. The one where we go, the Thunder and the Lightning. It's I'll think of it in a minute again.
It's a disco group, right?
Imagine Dragons, is that?
Yes.
Oh, that one, yeah.
How did you pull that out?
There you
just
go.
That
I was thinking of a totally different one.
Zen moment I was having there.
I wasn't exactly leading you well with the rendition. It's not like I'm putting it up on a tee for you.
Well, those songs have a tendency to stick in your head forever. Sure. And I just remember when you said it started sticking in my head again.
The Pacers sneaking up. But the thing about this season, the Pacers couldn't sneak up on somebody, but they're going to be without their star quarterback. It's akin to having your starting quarterback out for the year before the season even starts. And so you're like which, if it's going to happen, it's better for it to be that way, obviously, because you can plan, you can prepare, you can do whatever it is you can to alleviate that. But there's still, you know, unless the NBA comes up with a transfer portal all of a sudden, it's not going to – there's not a lot that they can do to replace that.
Well, they do. It's called free agency and it's called trades. But they're – I mean, they're in a position, obviously, where – they have it's like having a backup quarterbacks that have had to play before and know they can't. I mean, certainly, obviously, a helpful thing in basketball is you know, nobody plays the full 48, so it's not like you can go several seasons without asking your backup quarterback to do anything. You know, Andrew Nembhard and TJ McConnell have had to play plenty, and obviously, Andrew Nembhard has been starting at shooting guard. He's a point guard by trade. The point guard position is not the place that they're worried about. I mean, in terms of just somebody being able to do that, obviously they're very, very fortunate. You know, they've been rolling with 3-point guards. Rick Carlisle likes to have two ball handlers on the floor as much as he can. So this isn't, they're going to have guys that have played. Now, the issue is you're probably not going to be able to have two legit, not top of the line ball handlers. You know, starting shooting guard is going to be Benedict Mathurin. He's a guy that can handle the basketball, but he is not a point guard, by trade. He is a scoring two, 2-3 type of wing type of player. And so, I mean, you can ask him to bring the ball up. It's not like that's going to be an issue, but he's not really wired point guard. He's wired to go score. And so that's a change. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see how closely they hew to their style of play. You know, in terms of just, you know, bopping the ball around, you know, the constant movement, the constant passing. How does that change? And it's not Nembhard and McConnell that changes the view of that. Really, it's Mathurin. And I think that's been the interesting question throughout his career, is that he is a guy that is really kind of an ISO-driven type of guy. Like, Mathurin wants to get you one-on-one and drive on you. Like, I mean, he's wired that he wants to embarrass you. You know, he is constantly thinking about whether he can beat you one-on-one like that in anything. Like, that is how he measures everybody in the universe, is who could win a one-on-one game. That's just how he is. And they've had to really try to bend him to kind of force him as a square peg into a round hole, for this entire time he's been there. And, you know, to try to get him to be a more catch and shoot guy, a more quick decision guy, like somewhere that the ball doesn't stop in his hands. And, you know, like, now it's going to be a question of, okay, well, what do you want him to do? You know, do you want him to still be a guy that's really quick catch and shoot? Or are you going to need him to be a guy who goes and scores in isolation, because you're not going to have somebody with the gravity that Halliburton has, you know, bringing two bodies together as frequently as he does, so that there is an open man to go find. You know, that's, I think, going to be the big issue, is, or how often are you going to ask Mathurin to go get you a bucket? Because that's what happened when Halliburton missed time last year. Mathurin had some really big scoring games, in part because he just put his head down and went. And, you know, Rick Carlisle has acknowledged this, that he is asking him to kind of play differently than he has been asking him to kind of play differently than his instincts say. And the question is, you know, with Halliburton out, will they be asking him to play more his natural style of game that he naturally wants to do, or keep forcing him to try to play the way that they want to play, you know, long term, to make this system work? And so that's going to be, I think, very interesting, because you're already going to have a guy in Siakam that's going to be your lead scorer that can do it either way, that is very good with the ball popping around, very good catch and shoot, very good quick decision, outstanding in transition. But, you know, when stuff slows down, if they take away what you want, he can get somebody isolated on the wing and do that, you know, kind of turnaround bank shot jumper that he's just, you know, spectacular at. He's so efficient at that thing that he kind of works either way you want to play. Mathurin's just more of an isolation driven guy, and it's a question of how that's going to work. I mean, they're also going to need him, just they are going to want him to do certain things that are kind of the baselines for their style of play. Run the floor hard, you know, they really stress that, is trying to just get ahead of everybody so that you can get into actions early and try to beat somebody down the floor for easy ones. But when it gets into a half court setting, you know, like, how quick do they want him to make decisions? And sometimes, are they going to be willing to let him cross a guy up a couple of times and then drive on him, you know, and be okay with that, and you know, bounce off the help defender if he beats him? You know, that's kind of the stuff that I think is interesting in terms of how they're going to play. And some questions we're going to be asking Rick Carlisle as we head toward camp.
Coach?
No, I was just going to say, do you see them making any moves prior to the season, or wait till the season kind of unfolds to make any moves to either improve what they have lost, you know, this past off season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, usually by this point, you start to see a handful sometimes in camp. You know, most of your you know, offseason moves happen in that post June 30th, you know, really that first week. You got a handful of stuff still outstanding. You have a few restricted free agent guys that are still negotiating with their teams and everything. You know, Josh Giddey just signed his deal. Jonathan Kuminga is still kind of fighting with the Warriors to try to make that thing work. But there's not most of the musical chair, you know, musical chairs have mostly stopped at this point, but every once in a while you see a big move that kind of creates a little bit of action. You go back to the Damian Lillard trade a couple years ago that led to Boston getting Drew Holiday. And I think, you know, that move is the one that really wins them the title. Holiday was fantastic, you know, for them in that championship series. So it's a non-zero possibility that things can work out. But in terms of where the pieces stand long-term, I think it would be kind of difficult. Obviously they're big, you know, it's a little bit of an under the radar acquisition, but getting Jay Huff, I think, was kind of their biggest thing toward addressing the loss of Miles Turner. And you know, he's a guy that's, I think, going to be very interesting, how he fits in. They've got a bunch of centers, and I think they're going to go by committee and kind of see who stands out. They ended up bringing back both Isaiah Jackson and James Wiseman off their Achilles tendon tears, which surprised me a little, that they stuck with Wiseman and kept him around. I mean, they didn't really get a chance to see him because he played, you know, didn't even play a full game before he tore his Achilles. But obviously love the size and the athleticism there, and they can get him for cheap. You know, this is a guy who was former number two pick overall, you know, out of Memphis, was a super, you know, high, you know, recruit, coming out of there. And Isaiah Jackson is a guy that they really like, and they managed to keep him for cheap because of his Achilles tendon tear as well. They might've lost him, if he had a big productive season last year. He's going into free agency, and they managed to keep him, I think, a little bit above, the minimum. So you got those guys that can also do it, but Huff gives them the pick and pop option. I mean, last year was the first year, you know, he's 27. I think he might've just turned 28. And he's like, he's a really good pick and pop guy, but last year was the first year really he's been in an NBA rotation. You know, out of Virginia, he bopped around on, you know, really two-way contracts for a while, where he was only playing in 5, 10, you know, 15 games a season in the NBA, and mostly getting more time in the G League. You know, last year was the first time I think he spent almost the entirety of it with the big club. And he had, I think, 81 threes on, like, you know, 200 some attempts, something like that. You know, like, a tick under over 40%. If I think 41%, you love that from a center. Basically, when you get that from a guy who's 7 foot, that makes a big difference. You know, I think they have to have that pick and pop option for a five man. You know, I think that's a necessary action for them. Obviously, something that worked so well for Tyrese Haliburton and Miles Turner is a big reason why they were one of the best ball screen tandems, I think, in 24-25 or 23-24 in particular. So that's the thing that they had to have. I think that was something necessary. I'd be really surprised if they go out. I'm certainly not going to get another. They could get a point guard. They could get kind of a fourth point guard option, but it's not going to be somebody I think that plays above Nembhard or McConnell. It's somebody that adds a little bit of depth. That if one of those guys get dinged up, and you have to presume that your guys aren't playing 82. You know, you have to presume that somebody's going to get, you know, an ankle that costs them a couple of days, or a tight hamstring that they, you know, let chill out, or even a calf. You know, certainly you've seen the necessity.
Exactly. as Dustin goes a little blank there for a second, but that's like... okay. You'll get back and connected with us. Let's take a quick break anyway. It's time for that. Dustin Epirik with us from the Indy Star, and Coach Griff. We got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Glad that you're joining us and getting your week started right. Dustin Epirik from the Indy Star with us, Pacers beat writer, as well as Coach Griff. And I know you're a big college football fan. The Penn State Nittany Lions still hawking there around the top, man. They're just waiting for their opportunity, and we're going to see some important games as it's conference time, Dustin. It's time for these games to get good, for them to be important. Indiana has one that's as important as they have had in decades. Well, as Don Fisher said, probably since 1967. Because this is a top 10 matchup, and it's not that Indiana hasn't had top-ranked teams in there. They had that galore, especially when they're in the Big Ten East. It was a regular thing. But never did one of those matchups come in where people were thinking, oh, Indiana probably going to win this game, or they've got a shot at winning this game. That wasn't the case. Now it is. Now, I expect them to beat Illinois, but that's just my pick. But they have an opportunity against a top 10 team on national television Saturday night on NBC prime time. All the things that Indiana needs to really make a statement, because they haven't done that yet under Kurt Cignetti. Beating Michigan was a big win, but I don't think it was still a signature win. Michigan wasn't ranked at the time. So now you get a win over a top 10 team, then you go on the road, and if they can beat Iowa in Iowa City, that is going to set them up in the minds of people that well, here they are. They're legit again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's funny how things become our signature wins when you get them, and then, you know, they kind of get diluted over time. I mean, what was the first big win he got last year? Was it Nebraska?
UCLA, if you want to be honest.
UCLA. Yeah, no, exactly.
We thought it was huge because of, right. And it was because of where it was and all of that. Who knew that?
And it was on national TV. You know, I think that was an NBC game, stuff like that. And it's like, obviously you look back and you're like, well, okay, UCLA wasn't that great. But I mean, they did have to go into the Rose Bowl. And again, you look at all of last season and just consider it from a first year Indiana football coach's season usually look like, especially when it's a full transition. You know, when you don't think of, you know, you certainly had Bill Lynch take over the team when Terry Heppner was sick, and then you had Tom Allen taking over the team after Kevin Wilson's issues in that stretch, where it was somebody within the administration, within the program. In this case, when you're talking a full flip over, usually year one's pretty rough. Kevin Wilson's was brutal. I think Bill Mallory's was brutal.
He didn't win a game, I don't think.
Yeah, I think so. You know, for Kirk Cignetti to do what he did, a lot of those games that you look back and think, well, that was just some, you know, run of the mill Big Ten team. Those games really mattered. But certainly, obviously, this is at a different level. Certainly just playing the Notre Dame game was big, but, you know, they certainly didn't win that one. This one matters, obviously. I mean, I think If you're talking playoffs, you got to get this one. You have to get this or Penn State or Oregon. You know, like, you, if you get one of the three, there's a good chance you get in. And this is your best chance, out of the three. I think, you know, taking down Penn State or Oregon is going to be a lot tougher than taking down Illinois. And taking down Illinois is going to be really, really tough. And you get it at your place. You get all this buildup. So it's really significant. I mean, a lot of times I think games matter more or less in retrospect. Many of the games last year still matter, even though they're not necessarily like a win over a top 10 program at the time. Some of them were wins over top 25 teams that ceased to be top 25 teams after Indiana beat them. But this is it's a big deal. It's cool that it's, you know, not just one, but two teams that don't always get this spotlight. You know, like, Illinois had teams in the past but you got to think back to like Dana Howard in the 90s to remember Illinois, like, really. And I think there was Illinois Rose Bowl team that I can remember with like Juice Williams and Rashard Mendenhall, and I almost got to go back to then to think of an Illinois team that was anywhere near this. So cool for both, I think, programs to get this kind of spotlight for a game between these two teams to be to be one of the spotlight games of this week, and really probably is the biggest game of this week, even though Miami and Florida, I think, are getting, College Game Day. Certainly that's that's just a marquee name type of deal.
And the fact that ESPN carries the SEC and ACC games. Hello.
Yeah, no, exactly. The money matters, you know. It makes a difference. And so it's when you leave ESPN, they're going to punish you in some way. they tend to, you know, that's kind of how it goes. You go back to like when they lost the hockey contract, it's almost like people forgot hockey even existed for like a decade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the sort of thing that happens, but still going to be, you know, super awesome. I think atmosphere for that game. Really cool. It's always really cool just to see Indiana football is something on the marquee that has not happened very frequently.
Coach.
No, I just, you know, I concur with that sentiment that this game, probably by most people's breakdown, is the best chance for Indiana to get themselves on a roll and have that in-hand game when you go play Oregon or when you have to go play Penn State. But first you got to get by this one. But I don't know if you heard this, but Brett Bielema I guess injured his hand at halftime of the game against Western Michigan because he punched a whiteboard so hard that
that's a Bob Knight story.
He probably fractured his hand And
I remember Bob Knight. It was the game Indiana against Michigan, I believe. He was clapping his hands together so hard, he gave himself a compound fracture of one of his fingers. I would have to dig back, but I distinctly remember that. It was crazy. I mean, how hard do you have to do that to break your own finger against your own hand? I can see what Brett Bielema was upset about, because that's not the performance you want to see going into this game. But,
these are the performances that have ultimately hurt Illinois in the past when they've had these lackluster performances, especially at home. And but I guess he'll be questionable when the report comes out Saturday morning with all this, probably.
would old school Brett Bielema still play on the line with that?
He probably would. He's a tough guy, but
this also adds to the atmosphere, as you have just two coaches that are, I mean, colorful, you know, is undershooting it by a lot. There's got to be a better word for these two guys, you know, between Bielema and Cignetti. It's just, you know, all timers as far as, you know, press conferences are concerned. Bielema was good for saying something just completely wild. That adds to it, that it's not, you know, it's cool when it's sort of two young guys that you haven't really heard of that are just making their names, but these guys have been around. These are guys that have won, and guys that have been, you know, entertaining while doing it, you know. I think certainly adds to it that you put these two guys also on, you know, on prime time. That adds to the case. So they won 38-0 and he still broke his hand.
It's crazy to think that they've played so lackluster in the first half that it was a kind of a tight game against Western Michigan. But here's one thing that I heard, and maybe you can answer this because, you know, from the 30,000 feet level.
Sure.
It has to do basically, I heard, and these comments came out of Illinois this past week, about who is more prepared to going into this game, an Illinois or an Indiana team, based upon who they've played. And the argument was that Illinois is probably more so because they've already been exposed in certain areas that they have to correct when they played Duke or when they played Western Michigan, that Indiana, because who they played, they haven't been tested enough to know what their weaknesses are or are not.
Swap shop name.
I think, I do think the people are probably looking that different after the Old Dominion win over Virginia Tech, right? You know, I think that's certainly
win, but a beatdown. It was 28-0 at the half, and Virginia Tech fires Brent Pry after that. So one of two coaches fired over the weekend, which is also something we didn't used to see, Dustin. Sure. College coaches getting fired three games into the season, but Purdue 2 years. But they made the right move. Look at Purdue right now. Purdue is as improved as any team in the Big Ten. And, boy, you've got to give Barry Odom a lot of credit for that. Well, hell, all the credit for that. But what a great turnaround they've done.
Yeah.
UCLA was just – look, it was bad, and you could tell it was getting worse. It was just one of those obvious things, and no surprise there. I've wondered about Tino Sunseri, Indiana's OC from last year, who left, or assistant OC, whatever, and went there to take the OC job, which I get moving up to get that on your resume. But, man, sometimes you got to think, and there was no way I saw UCLA getting better and that not being a bad situation. So now he's probably going to be looking for a job again where he had been in a solid place for a number of years under Cignetti.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, I mean, it is the numbers you're talking about and the difference between a quarterback coach job and an offensive coordinator job, really hard to pass up, really hard. Because, like, when you're thinking it's different when you're talking about head coaches, when it's $10 million versus $12 million, or it's $3 million versus $5 million. When you're in the millions, you're fine. Like, when it's 200 to 400, you know, or 500 to, you know, 750, like, you know, it's just like it is a dramatic difference when you're talking about a position coach versus a coordinator. And
plus they will have plus they'll have to buy him out.
Yeah.
They'll have, because he's probably there on a 3-year deal.
Right.
And that's the other thing that was, I found interesting with the move is they not only have to get Foster's contract out from underneath them, they now have any of those guys that came in last year.
Anybody that's on
that's always the deal. That's part of what people don't see in these big buyouts. I'm like, that's not all.
No,
that's why Indiana per se is probably around $60 million right now in buyouts over the last decade.
Yeah,
and people say that's not possible. Yeah, it is. These assistance numbers add up, especially when you have an OC who gets fired, replaced, and fired. I mean, there's two contracts you got to buy out. So
exactly. I mean, and I don't know what the difference was between Sinceri's contract at Indiana and what it was at UCLA. I'm just saying the coordinator jobs tend to bring a certain amount of cash.
Oh, yeah. He got more.
Their coordinator as well. It's not like he was making 50 grand or something like that. So not to try to undersell that. And more of these guys are getting multi-year deals. You still usually aren't paying, if you have a head coach on a 4-year deal, you probably don't have the assistants all on 4-year deals. I mean, they're probably on 1 or 2 year things, but I mean, I think you're seeing more 2-year, more multi-year deals to keep these guys around. I mean, head coaches certainly understand that, you see some of those guys defer some of their own money to make sure that their coordinators get paid and their assistants get paid because they understand the importance of that. They need to be able to delegate. They need to be able to get people they can trust. And if they lose people and they move people up, they need to be able to get, entice new people. I mean, so there is an understanding for how important assistants are. And so, they push for that. And so it ends up being, those salaries are going up. You are seeing more multi-year guys, and then you have to buy them out if you decide to buy out the head coach. So it does make it more difficult. Obviously, the other side of it is what's leading, I think, to the early firings is because you have the transfer portal, because you have NIL, the standards are higher, and they don't, it used to, prior to the portal being what it is, prior to the ability to transfer and not have to sit out a season, you would say, hey, you need a whole class. No matter what you get, you get 4 years unless it is a disaster, unless it is very clearly obvious that you've got no momentum whatsoever and no chance. We're going to at least let you play out a full class of guys and see those freshmen that you recruited in your first class at least become seniors. At least going to hold out until you get that chance because there's the fairness to it, but there's also the idea that, okay, if you're going to fire somebody quicker, who's going to come play for you then? Now because you have this investment and, the ability to go get guys and get them quickly, Kurt Cignetti going out and winning last year makes it harder on everybody else, and that he's not the only one that's been able to do it. When Kurt Cignetti can get you to the playoff at Indiana in 1 year, they look around at everybody else looks around at their coach, and if they can't do it, they're like, well, why not? He can't,
Yeah, right. Especially at UCLA.
Yeah, exactly. places like that are going to have high standards. I mean, UCLA has obviously never been necessarily a football powerhouse. They've been pretty good a lot. But Indiana, it's a basketball school. But you can say, all right, we're Los Angeles. You're not going to be missing NIL money. You've got the capacity to do this.
Now they have got rev share. So that changes things for UCLA, although they have really stunk it up in that department. But I still look back and I have to wonder, after watching the Georgia-Tennessee game over the weekend, which was a fantastic game, fantastic environment. What's that? What does Neyland hold? Close to 100,000?
Over 100.
Yeah, it's like 110.
It's not 110. That's Michigan.
Might be like 105.
Yeah.
Okay.
That could have been Nico I'm a leaving, but Nico I'm a leaving left for UCLA. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to grasp who and what the hell was being thought of by these guys at this time, because no matter what, unless UCLA was just offering a butt ton of money, why on God's green earth would you go to a program that is not good and you're leaving a program that is in the hunt in the SEC of all places? So just a really head scratcher, and it just, that move continues to look worse and worse. They took less money, Dustin, to go to UCLA on top of it. And so I'm like, whatever, man.
I mean, I think didn't he? Oh, I mean, there was a whole bunch of drama that I don't even remember. But you know, like it was. I mean, it was the most of the era whole situation. Even how they got him in the first place. I mean, I think there was some sketchiness in terms of, you know, like how close that adhered to even the, you know, whatever regulations there are with NIL. I think that was one of the first collective gets. I don't know. I believe it was a big
it was considered product. Not really, but the first trade in college football, although it wasn't, but it actually worked out that way because the quarterback who was leading Tennessee was at UCLA and expected to be their starting quarterback this year.
Right. Yeah. So no, I mean, it is weird stuff. I mean, I can't, like, there was, I'd have to consult all the guys, you know, I certainly still know a bunch of guys in the Tennessee beat and just remember just following their stuff. And it was just all over the place. And they were just saying, you know, he's a good guy, but he's being, you know, guided by people who might not necessarily have, it's not that they don't have his best interests at heart, but like, you know, you get parents involved, you get agents involved, right. You know, like all this kind of stuff. And it's still the wild, wild west, you know, like it's still, like we're still in a place where this thing isn't even close to regulated. And it's, you know, like falling all over yourself to give people the benefit of the doubt. It's hard. You know, I think it's hard for, you know, kids to make the right decisions on this kind of stuff, because I think there's a lot of unknown that you go into in terms of, all right, like how much money do I need to make now? And what am I trying to do to set myself up for the future? Because it's just like, hey, you know, like, you do when that kind of money's on the table, you have to consider making sure that you get it, because you don't, you know, you could, you know, blow your knee out tomorrow and you don't ever have a chance of making money off of football again. So you better do it now. But there's also a, you know, do you think you could be an NFL player? Like, you have to consider that. You have, you know, like, do you, how much do you care about your education? You know, making sure that you make the most of that. Like, you are trying to maximize a whole lot of value in a short amount of time. And, you know, and it's things that used to be really stupid decisions in the past are not necessarily stupid decisions now. And, you know, it's a lot to put on somebody who's 18 to 22, you know, to decide, okay, like what is really going to be the best thing. You got to make sure you get this money. Like you have to, you know, like if you have this opportunity, like, you know, if you're not pulling in 6-7 figures as a top level player, like you're leaving money on the table and you don't know if you're going to get it again. You know, like you might end up playing football in Canada, or you might play in Europe, or you might not play professionally. So you got to make sure you cash in on something so that you've got some kind of nest egg to start the rest of your life with, if you're not going to play football. But you also have to consider what you're going to do after that. Again, whether you're going to make a professional push or you're going to be somebody who needs that degree, and make sure you get it, that you can use that to, you know, for your livelihood going forward. You got to consider all of this stuff, and where are you going to have a chance to play, you know, like, or not. And, you know, like, but where are you going to have a chance to learn and develop? You know, it's a lot to balance. And I didn't follow that situation super closely. I just know enough to know that it was really weird. So, you know, like, that's kind of it. It is not easy. I wouldn't think and again, the money's great. And so, you know, no one's going to shed any tears for anybody when that kind of money's on the table. But it's still not easy, I think, to process. I mean, you know, like, you know, Shannon, you had a son that played before this. I mean, like, can you imagine how different recruiting would have been if you had to consider this stuff?
I don't even want to consider.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It is the, it's crazy now that there are agents that are involved with these kids' parents, and that's kind of what happened to Nico. His dad got involved and wanted $2 million out of Tennessee, and Tennessee said, there's the exit. Don't let the door hit you.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that I think is probably the headache for most coaches now is dealing with those issues.
That too, yeah.
Because you're not, you know, you're dealing with an agent, or you're dealing with this or that. And I don't know how they do it in that regard, because of the amount of time that would take in hindsight, just looking at that from a recruiting standpoint. So it's changed completely. So I'm glad. Yeah. I didn't have to do that. This was a very simple transaction.
Yeah.
Here's your tuition, room, board, and books in your stipend they gave you. That's great. Sign on the dotted line.
That's what I was shooting for. Exactly. That's right. I mean, those boxes are checked. I'm good.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's up next for you, my friend?
Still 2 weeks of nothing. No, I mean, I'm sure there'll be something I'll probably do this week, but we'll have next, I think Thursday, we'll be meeting with, you know, we have our kind of front office availability. You know, we'll get to talk to Chad Buchanan and Ted Wu, you know, about just how they built this team, what they feel about, you know, these Pacers and whatnot. So I'm sure I'll be doing some, you know, preseason stuff leading up to that. And you know, again, media day is the 29th. So 2 weeks from today, you'll see everybody show up for pictures and to have to babble with us. I'm sure they missed us a whole lot. I'm sure, you know, these guys just can't wait to see me and Tony East again. You know, I'm sure during that period, they'll probably do some fun stuff. I imagine, you know, the last couple of years, they've done some kind of team retreat, you know, probably go down to hang out in Pascal's house where he has a full gym, you know, full court, you know, like that's what $45 million a year can buy you. Just be going from there. And you know, I'll be watching Illinois, Indiana on Saturday. That thing's going to be pretty wild.
Cannot wait, man. That's going to be an electric environment, buddy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your last couple of
weeks of semi-freedom. I will.
Yeah, semi. Dustin DePirik, the great sports beat writer from the Indy Star for the Pacers and just our all-around sports guru. He is the man that
I appreciate that. Thanks, guys. I enjoy having both of you guys. This is cool.
Yeah, a little like this retreat for you today.
Yeah, definitely. Great to see both of you guys.
It takes two people to handle you, man. You've got so much knowledge and information. It takes two of us because you blow everybody's mind. Appreciate you, brother. He is the best. Dustin DePirik. Make sure you're giving him a follow, keeping up with all of his content, and being a subscriber. More coming up. Big news. Big news for the Hoosier.com. And for On3, as that ever expanding platform just got bigger for basketball coverage. We'll talk about that on the other side once we return. Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle and Coach Griff along for the ride. Andy, welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Monday. We're getting your week started off right. Coach Griff with us as coming to you on your favorite radio sports radio stations like 97.7 ESPN The Ref, as well as WJLB, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM in the region in Chicago, and Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Big news, Coach, as On3 just continues to elevate its platform. First, it's the biggest, the fastest growing sports platform that there is out there, the On3 network, the Hoosier.com, a part of that network, which has grown, that the old rivals that the Hoosier.com used to be affiliated with and left to join On3. Now they have acquired rivals. So that's back.
Yeah.
It keeps getting better with a subscription to the Hoosier.com that you can check out for just a dollar and get 50% off for your entire first year. You also get a courtesy subscription to The Athletic, which I read a lot. I mean, between On3 and The Athletic, that's a lot of content right there. But guess what? There's more. Now, a part of the On3 network, the Field of 68. If you're a basketball fan, today, On3 and Rivals announced that the Field of 68 Media Network, a leading voice in college basketball, is joining the rapidly growing platform. The move brings some of the sport's most respected insiders, voices, and in-depth analysis to the On3 Rivals platform and network. Founded by longtime basketball reporters Jeff Goodman and Rob Doster, the Field of 68 has quickly become a go-to destination for diehard basketball fans through its mix of national shows, team-specific podcasts. They were just in Bloomington.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were just in Bloomington on
just
Friday.
Just in Bloomington. And I invite you to check that out. They had a big sit-down with the coach and a couple of the players, and just a nice look into it. And so, man, now you get all of that in one place.
I know. It's crazy.
All of that. I mean, On3, Rivals, The Athletic, and the Field of 68. What are you kidding me? Can't get any better than that. It's wild. So go to thehoosier.com and get yourself. And it's $1 to check it out and 50% off.
Yeah, they're going to have to raise that. They're going to have to raise that soon with all these additions.
Give it to the people. Give the people what they want. Bill says he can't afford a new subscription. Well, then cancel the ones you have and get this one. Five things that the Field of 68 talks too negatively about IU. I disagree with that. I think that they talk openly and honestly, and sometimes people just don't like what they're hearing, per se, because, for one thing, Jeff Goodman's daughter goes to IU, but he's not, he was not a fan of the last basketball coaching regime, but who was? We all knew what was going on, and he was outspoken about it, but he should have been. It was the truth. Anyway, that's a lot. Rob Doster, one of the great reporters in college basketball as well. So it's incredible coverage. That's all I can tell you. There's not a better place where you can get more than right there. So just continues to build that up. And I know that the guys who work so hard with thehoosier.com would appreciate that they'll be joining us throughout the week. And we'll talk about that yesterday. And Rudy's asking me to please tell the people what we hear. I'm not sure what that means. So, Coach, if you can translate that for me, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, you're good at that, better than that than probably me at this time. On a Monday.
Well, I don't know what it is to decipher. I generally think that I speak my mind pretty freely. So, we got that. There's going for us. So, but hey, a big week as Indiana welcomes in Illinois for a prime time game. I mean, the enormity of this game, Coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's so early in the season. I know that as coaches, they don't want that kind of enormity in the players' heads, but because you want to take it as it's the next game, it's the most important game. But let's be honest. It's more than that. It is the biggest game that IU, a biggest home game IU has had in decades.
And well, that is
because of the opportunity that lies with this game, Coach.
Yeah. And
more importantly, the fact that Indiana is more than capable of taking advantage of this opportunity.
Well, there's no question that the game that this Saturday is a game that I think we all have said will be a monumental game to start off the Big Ten, as well as a three-game stretch that Indiana is going to be ran through a gauntlet of tests at home and on the road. And they're playing a team now that's pretty much similar to them as it pertains to hype and expectation, except they're rated ninth in the country. Which I'm not quite sure they're that high in my mind, but we'll find out come Saturday. The whole thing with this ball game for Indiana, and I think this is what kind of I came out of this win on Saturday or Friday night against Indiana State, because sometimes you get asked on a 73-0 game, what does a coach learn about a game that you're just so overwhelmingly better than, you know, the team across from you? Well, I think they learned a lot when it comes to addressing issues that they had seen the previous couple weeks, because you did not see many of those opportunities appear before on Friday against Indiana State, big chunk plays, things of that nature. And you saw some throws that Mendoza made that were incredible throws. I feel like he's really becoming confident within the offense. and with what he's got around him, and trusting everyone that protection, all that is on point. So it's going to be a fantastic game, a fantastic atmosphere. It's just now a matter, can Indiana go out and put four quarters of football together that enables them to have an opportunity to beat a quality Illinois team that's coming in Saturday night?
Absolutely. We look forward to talking about it throughout the week. Coach will be back with us again tomorrow. Looking forward to Jamie Shaw joining us from On Three, as we'll talk about Indiana's recent visit and on the basketball side and more that is coming up and more about this week coming up in football. Coach has got Hoosier Tailgate as well. Tonight. Make sure you're following that. Appreciate each and every one of you for being with us. Thanks to Don Fisher, of course, Dustin DePirik, Coach, and each and every one of you. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.